Meeting will please come to order now. It's time that we who are thus assembled, as well as our friends on the air, direct our attention to a very, very important subject in our state. Before introducing the speaker and announcing that subject, I'd like to remind you that 1 week hence, the Senator from New York, Senator Jacob K. Javits, will speak to us on U.S. peace leadership, a very, very important subject, and surely he's unusually qualified to handle it. Today we have a speaker who is serving his first term in the state Senate, a speaker who comes from the southern extremity of our state, one who represents over 1 million people, a population comparable to the state of Connecticut, one who represents a state that's a county that's highly diversified, coastal, mountainous, agricultural, industrial, a great deal of governmental enterprise therein, one that's growing rapidly in population, one that has many, many, many problems. I think it's most noteworthy that our speaker today comes from a part of the state that presumably would win most by the adoption of the measure which he will oppose. It seems to me that that in and of itself is a great recommendation for him. It's evidence of objectivity, of his ability to study and convince himself as to the merits of the program, and it's evidence that he has the courage of his convictions. So we have here today a young senator who is an attorney, who is leading, one of the leaders in opposition to State Proposition number 15 on reapportionment, and I give you Senator Hugo Fisher of San Diego, the 40th district of this state.
Dr. Ellsworth, President Graybeal, distinguished guests and friends of the Commonwealth Club of California. I understand that I follow by a few hours another traveling politician who gave a non-political talk. So I intend to likewise give what I would call a non-political talk, though I looked it over while I was eating, I kind of thought it reminded me of the tome which sat on the Virginia parlor table of a famous lawyer friend of mine when he was a kid. He said it was a very impressive tome, embossed leather, gold, embossed binding or gold lettering. It was entitled An Impartial History of the Civil War from the Southern Point of View. So with that, I will launch into my impartial history of Mr. Minnelli's Civil War from an impartial point of view. To begin with, let us determine what Proposition number 15 is and what it is not. Let us examine the purported evils which its proponents say that it will solve. Then let us consider what effect the passage might have on the future of California. By no stretch of the imagination is Proposition number 15 conceived, intended, or directed toward giving each citizen an equal voice in the legislature. To the contrary, it is a proposition to readjust legislative influence between various areas of the state, regardless of population. In this respect, its intended effect differs not one whit from the measure which went into effect in 1930 as a result of a constitutional initiative which Judge Spence tells me he had an active part in. Prior to 1930, all senators were apportioned on a population basis. Since 1930, we have had what is commonly called a modified federal system, initiated originally for the purpose of protecting regional interests in one and some places from being dominated by regional interests in other places. The 1930 plan was initially intended as a check and a balance between rural and urban interests. The one before us now, Proposition 15, is intended to be a balance primarily between northern and southern interests, or so Mr. Benelli tells us. Benelli's scheme is nothing but another modified federal system. Mr. Benelli's talk about equalizing the voting power of individual citizens is nothing but so much eyewash. But he does say that lots of problems will be solved if we adopt his scheme. Now, any scheme advanced in politics as a panacea for all or many ills is difficult to discuss rationally simply because so many unrelated questions are raised by the proponents. The difficulty, however, should not blind us to the necessity of doing so. Since this measure is not intended and does not have the effect of equalizing the voting power of each of our citizens, what reasons are advanced in favor of reshuffling the regionalisms? Maybe there are some legislative failures or excesses of the past, which would not have occurred had Benelli's plan been in effect. To discover what these failures and excesses might have been, I have read a great many of Benelli's speeches and press releases. The arguments usually concern themselves with the following five subjects: the possessory interest tax, water, narcotics, pornographic literature, and the distribution of gas tax funds. Let's take each of these up in order. In 1959 session of the legislature, the state legislature adopted a series of measures intended to put into motion a long-term statewide development of the entire water resources of the state of California. The keystone measure of the entire proposal is the $1.75 billion bond issue, which is known as the Burns-Porter Act. As to the entire development plan, Governor Brown has said, and I quote him, "The present proposal is a compromise reached only over a decade of deadlock," unquote. Every major proposal to break that deadlock in previous years had its roots in provincialism and regionalism, and therefore failed. Like every measure intended for the benefit of the state as a whole, the Burns-Porter Act is not an ideal solution for any single region of the state. But most of us in the legislature thought it was the best solution for the state as a whole, and the only statewide water program that we could agree upon. During the 1959 session, Mr. Benelli was one of those who came to Sacramento seeking to have the governor back contrary proposals which would have been to his liking, but which would have resulted in a regional solution rather than a statewide solution. His proposal would have resulted in a statewide water development system for the benefit of Los Angeles County. I personally fought against Mr. Benelli's water proposal because it was regional and provincial in scope. I take credit in part for dissuading the governor from taking Benelli's advice on water. If his proposal had reached the floor of the Senate, I would have voted against it because of its provincialism. If San Diego had had two senators, as contemplated by Proposition 15, it is rather more than likely that there would have been two votes against it on the Senate floor from San Diego rather than one. The key to the entire water plan, that is the financing measure of the Burns-Porter Act, passed the state Senate by a vote of 25 to 10. A majority of the 25 votes in favor of the bill were cast by northern senators. In fact, a majority of all northern senators voted for the Burns-Porter Act. No amount of political double talk can obscure the fact that many a northern senator braved the prospective provincial rebuke of his home district to vote for a plan which he felt was in the best interest of the state as a whole, something on which we can differ, but you can't take away the stature of a man who has undertaken such statesmanship, and only a small man such as Benelli would turn his back upon such statesmanship. Now let us listen to Mr. Benelli's next loud bleat, and I quote him directly, quote, "During the 1959 session of the legislature, the possessory interest tax bill was introduced to permit all agencies of local government which depend upon the property tax for their support to continue to tax private contractors' interests in defense production tools, machinery, and supplies. The defeat of this bill in the state's Senate, dominated by Cal County senators, unconcerned with the production conflicts, resulted in the loss of more than $200 million in assessed valuation in Los Angeles County alone. End of Benelli's quote. Benelli's statement of history is intentionally misleading. The legislature has never authorized the taxing of possessory interests. We didn't permit them to continue. They never had that right. In the late 50s, a number of local governments around the state attempted to levy a tax upon the so-called possessory interest. The taxes were collected under protest, and the question was immediately taken to court. The Supreme Court of California decided that no such tax could be legally levied, and that all such taxes had been illegally collected. Neither Los Angeles County nor any other agency in the state has ever had a legal right to levy or collect a possessory interest tax. While this question was being litigated, however, Los Angeles County spent the impounded tax funds against the advice of its own county council. Mr. Benelli now stands in the position of one who illegally raised the taxes and then spent them in spite of his lawyer's advice. In 1959, a number of local agencies under the lead of Los Angeles County sought the passage of an assembly bill intended not only to legalize such assessments in the future, but, believe it or not, to legalize the retentions of the taxes already illegally collected. That measure passed the assembly. In the Senate, it was heard by the Senate Revenue and Taxation Committee, which refused to report it out favorably. Now, you should note that while Benelli began by talking about the Northern and Southern Division of Senators, he here complains about Cal County Senators. What is the truth of the matter, and what is the effect that Benelli's plan would have had upon its consideration? The Revenue and Taxation Committee, chaired by Senator Dilworth of Riverside County, has 11 members who serve by virtue of preference and seniority. Of the 10 senators present at the hearing, 8 have substantial defense contracts in their districts and have tax problems relating to federally owned tools, machinery, and supplies identical to those of Los Angeles County. Of the members present at the hearing, only 2 senators, Senators Arnold and O'Sullivan, could be called Cal County senators for tax purposes, and only they could have be said to have had no direct interest in the possessory interest tax. Interestingly enough, the only vote in favor of the possessory interest tax came from so-called Cal County Senator O'Sullivan. The representatives of Los Angeles County poo-pooed the suggestion that this tax could not be levied against the federal government without also levying it against local governments of every nature. But since the hearing, the United States Supreme Court in the Phillips Petroleum case affirmed that any such possessory interest tax could not be levied against the federal government alone, but would have to be levied against all levels of government, from school districts to irrigation districts. The compounded confusion of such a situation, I suspect, is apparent to all of us. Another important consideration, into my way of thinking, and an overwhelming one, was a competitive disadvantage in which California defense contractors would have been placed. Many states, such as New York, have been endeavoring to prevail on Congress to shift defense contracts from California to areas now suffering from industrial immigration. It is just the kind of advantage they were looking for, and recognizing this, the California congressional delegation unanimously advised that disaster would follow the adoption of a possessory interest tax in California. Adoption of the possessory interest tax measure in the form in which it appeared before the Senate Committee on Revenue and Taxation would have wreaked economic havoc in many areas throughout the state and the judgment of most of us. On balance, the Revenue and Taxation Committee found the measure wanting on its merits and properly refused its passage. The makeup of the committee itself clearly shows that its determination had nothing to do with cows, mountains, latitude, nor the position of the stars, for that matter. At first blush, I favored the possessory interest tax, since such a great part of our economy is based upon defense contracting. But on careful examination, I deemed it highly prejudicial. I would have voted against it if it had reached the floor of the Senate. Under Benelli's plan, there would have been 2 senators from San Diego to oppose it rather than 1. When Benelli first began pushing his plan, his main argumentative reliance was on the possessory interest tax and water. Since then, however, narcotics has become a politically sexy issue, and so he has taken up this cudgel against the Senate. Again, his reasoning is wrong, and his statement of the facts is dishonest. Let me again quote Benelli. Quote, also in the 1959 session of the legislature, a bill designed to curb the sale of narcotics to minors went down to ignominious defeat in the Senate, although it received the endorsement of the Elks Lodge and other civic groups throughout California. Close quote. The petition circulated by the Elks was drafted into a measure known as Assembly Bill 119. It was introduced in the opening days of the legislature and was killed in a committee in the Assembly and never reached the Senate. The measure to which Benelli really refers is Assembly Bill 2727, known as the Dills Bill. It was introduced in the closing days of the session for propaganda purposes, to all intents and purposes. It was not endorsed by the Elks, and when Mr. Dills brought it before the Senate Judiciary Committee, he offered no testimony in its behalf. The Senate Judiciary Committee, of which I am a member, is considered by many unbiased observers as being the most impartial, thorough, and painstaking committee in either house of the legislature. Its membership is determined not on a regional or sectional basis, but rather by the right of its members to practice law. The Dills Bill died in that committee, one, because it was obviously a propaganda grandstand play, having no proper place in the legislative process. Two, because no testimony was offered as to its necessity and its effect. And three, because it was introduced too late in the session to give adequate hearing and consideration. However, since the end of that session, further hearings on this ill-timed and ill-conceived measure clearly demonstrate that its practical effect would have been to lessen the number of convictions for narcotics violations. The Dills Bill should have been defeated on its merits, and no amount of district reshuffling by Benelli can change those merits. No regional difference in the Senate prevented Assemblyman Dills from introducing his measure in time to be properly heard. No regional difference in the Senate kept Dills from offering any testimony in favor of his bill. The lawyer senators from the 1st District, Modoc County, and from the 40th District, San Diego County, hold identical views on Mr. Dills, his measure, and his methods, as we do on Mr. Benelli, his measure, and his methods. Another afterthought by Mr. Benelli relates to the distribution of gas tax funds. As you may know, 65% of the gas tax fund is apportioned among the various districts of the state by statute. The remaining 35% is apportioned by the Highway Commission at its discretion, where it thinks the need is greatest and it need not follow the statutory apportionment. This 35% was originally set aside to take care of the very complaint that Benelli is now making against the Senate. Let's see how the commission is set up and how it functions. The director of the Department of Public Works, Robert Bradford, is the statutory chairman of the commission. The other six members are appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. Three members come from south of the Tehachapi Mountains and three from the north thereof. All of the commissioners come from counties with more than 1/3 of a million population. They all come from counties with bigger urban than rural populations. If Benelli's theory of politics is valid, then the Highway Commission would be using all of the 35% at their discretion in urban areas, all of which, of course, is poppycock. The very act which creates the Highway Commission provides, and I again quote from the law, each member of the California Highway Commission shall represent the state at large and not any particular district or section, unquote. Proposition 15 will not change this concept one iota. It's too bad that Proposition 15 is not motivated by any such high purpose. Recently, a considerable campaign has gotten underway against pornographic literature. Benelli now recollects that some years ago, when he was an assemblyman, a Senate committee refused to report out a pornographic control bill which he had introduced. The trouble with most of such measures, and I suspect with his, is that they ignore two things. First, the Constitution itself, and secondly, the fact that the only adequate and proper control of a child's reading habits lies not with the state, but with his parents and with his school. While Benelli berates the Senate for having once killed such a control bill of his, he failed to mention this year that a measure similar to his own was refused passage on the floor of the Assembly in 1959. We can only divine from this fact that if the Senate had been organized according to the Benelli plan, it would have done the same thing to Benelli's bill in years past as was done by the Assembly in 1959. Benelli's reference to pornographic literature issue is nothing but old-fashioned bloody shirt politics. It has nothing to do with regionalism in any dimension. I have pointed out that the philosophic arguments for equal representation as to each citizen are not any concern of the Benelli plan. I have shown that none of the problems he discusses would have been resolved differently if his plan had been in effect. This leaves us with nothing but an examination of some of the arithmetical hocus-pocus involved in the redistribution of Senate seats. Some of Benelli's concepts are a little short of enchanting. Some of his logic is just plain a little short. The proponents of Proposition 15 love to compare Los Angeles County with Alpine County. The 28th Senatorial District, represented by Senator Charles Brown, includes Inyo, Mono, and Alpine counties. Senator Brown has represented Mono and Inyo counties for 22 years. Both of these counties are southern in Benelli's lexicon. A few years back, the 400 people in Alpine County were added to the 28th District. My guess is that Senator Brown's outlook on any measure before the Senate has not changed by so much as a comma as a result of his being called either a northern or a southern senator, and his ideas won't be changed if Mr. Benelli's scheme passes and Alpine County is again taken out of his district. Kings County, incidentally, is presently a senatorial district. It represents another interesting example in Benelli's geography. Kings County has 47,000 people. To the north is Fresno County with 355,000 people. To the west is Monterey with 191,000. To the south, Kern with 281,000. Its smallest neighbor is Tulare with 151,000, more than three times the number of Kings County. Each of these four counties is presently represented by its own senator. Did Benelli's plan take little Kings County and add it to the next biggest county, Tulare? No. Did it add it to the next biggest county after that, Monterey? No. Did it add it to the next biggest county after that, Kern? No. It added it to Fresno County, which district already had better than a third of a million population. Any place you examine the shifting lines under Benelli's plan, you find this same sort of numbers game. Little, if any, of it has any relation to the needs or desires of the people to be represented. Now, let me make a few more remarks on the positive side. The problem of proper and adequate representation should never be swept under the carpet. As the population of this state shifts, as particular districts run into peculiar problems, as economic and cultural interests change, it will always be in order to examine the adequacy and the functioning of our representative government. By this, I do not imply that we should take the word of the northern chauvinist who complains about the Southern California domination of the Assembly, nor the word of the southern chauvinist who complains about the northern domination of the Senate. Rather, I think we should examine into the individual problems faced by individual districts. For instance, the 6th Assembly District includes not one, two, or three counties, as is in the case of each senatorial district, but 10 counties. One man is required to look out after this entire district. He faces a well-nigh insuperable obstacle in attempting to properly acquaint himself with the problems throughout his district, and for that matter, even to get around it periodically. The 6th District has less than the normal number of persons represented by an average assemblyman, but I think few would argue that we ought to add a couple of extra counties to the district just to make it exactly even. The area encompassed by District Number 5 in the senatorial plan of Benelli would include the 9 counties, Sierra, Nevada, Placer, El Dorado, Alpine, Amador, Calaveras, Tuolumne, and Mariposa. Does Mr. Benelli expect anybody to adequately represent all of the interests and be reasonably well acquainted with such a disparate areas as occur within such a district? Even though Los Angeles County has roughly one-third of all the assemblymen, its lone senator must have a difficult time staying on top of the proliferating problems throughout his district. The time has come to take a dispassionate and careful look at the balance and adequacy of our legislature. And where a remedy is needed, it should be constructively approached. But the answer is not the one proposed by Mr. Benelli of taking away needed representation from other areas of the state. Mr. Benelli's plan does not examine into the problem facing Los Angeles County in the state Senate. It seeks rather to divide the state sectionally, to deny to Californians their just due, namely, that the interests of all sections of the state and of all segments of our society be duly served by their general government. The practical effect of the Benelli plan is to set Southerner against Northerner, and the rural dweller against the urban dweller. It comes at a time in the history of this state when more than anything else we need statesman-like approaches to the problems which we all face in common. Pete Phillips, the political editor of the McClatchy Papers, wrote as follows, quote, "The breaking of the north-south intersectional deadlock over water development will go down in history as a crowning achievement of the entire decade," unquote. That was written in 1959. Mr. Phillips may well be able to write in 1960, and I propose this quote to him. "The Benelli plan has made impossible any north-south intersectional solution to any statewide problem for an entire decade," unquote. Such a legacy may be desired by one supervisor in one county, but it is little to be desired by any true citizen of California. The Senate of California, as now constituted, has served the people responsibly and well, better than any state senate in the nation. Revolution is not its just due. California does not deserve revolution. It deserves continuity of good government. I commend the gentlemen of this club for their having taken a stand against Proposition Number 15. Mr. Benelli's plan is the wrong solution to the wrong problem at the wrong time. In fact, I say it just plain wrong, wrong, wrong.
Thank you, Senator. Our President Lloyd Grabeel will now come forward and lead in the question and answer discussion. President Grabeel.
Members of Commonwealth, I trust you have recovered from the evening which we spent with the President last night. A delightful evening, I'm sure, and we were happy that our ladies could be with us. And again, I say it is always our regret, even that in arranging for our ladies to be with us, that it means some men members may not be able to get in the limited facilities. We have had to remember, however, that Commonwealth probably wouldn't get the dues paid regularly if the ladies didn't favor the continuance of the membership. Senator Fisher, if you return now to the lectern here. We start off with two or three very pertinent questions, it seems to me. First one, who put up the money for the petition and how much?
They were mainly Los Angeles firms, as I understand it. The amount has been filed with the Secretary of State. I don't offhand recall what it was, but it was a very substantial amount. I will tell you, though, that when they were having a dinner, supposedly for Mr. Benelli, a testimonial dinner, we discovered on the back of the invitation, an engraved invitation, in print about the size of that legend American banknote on the bottom of foreign stamps. And about that kind of type was a legend which indicated that the funds might be going into this campaign. I asked for an opinion of the Attorney General as to whether or not these would have to be reported. And you never heard such a wailing and a gnashing of teeth as I was greeted with when their scheme was discovered. They were collecting money for Mr. Benelli, but in fact for Proposition 15, and didn't want most of the people who were going to the dinner to know it. as a result, they did have to report all of that, and if you'll write to the Secretary of State, I think he can give you the exact amount of money.
This next question, I think you can clarify. You have used the name Bonelli with a great deal of familiarity, and perhaps up here we're not quite so familiar with the different characters of Los Angeles. Is the Bonelli you mentioned the same Bonelli at Los Angeles who got into difficulty a few years ago with the legal authorities?
You can answer. The other one was Bill Bonelli, and he's in Mexico, not in Los Angeles. It's not the same.
There are two questions now that go to the heart of this whole proposition. Any of us who have had the occasion to study the problems of metropolitanization of a great state and its representation in the legislative body are conscious that continuing studies are necessary. I read these two questions, then I wish you would really develop the principle involved. Should some sort of reapportionment of the Senate be undertaken, as many seem to think it should? And this question, you are opposed to Proposition 15. Do you favor the status quo indefinitely? Or is there some other approach to giving more effective representation in the state Senate to the larger metropolitan areas?
I think any person who is either a student of government or involved in government as a politician would be a fool to say the status quo is good forever. Government is an example of changing conditions. If we didn't have changing conditions, we wouldn't need government at all. We'd pass a set of laws and let it go at that and go home and never reconvene. The fact of the matter is that we have a lot of shifting population in California. Our demographic studies indicate that another 20 or 30 years, Northern California will have about the same number of people as Southern California, dividing at the Tehachapi Mountains. I think the problem really is to examine into the ability of a man to properly represent his district. When his district gets so big, or the problems get so great, or the number of people gets so great that he cannot adequately represent those within his district, when he can't analyze the problems and make them known to his fellow legislators, at this point, I think that we need to re-examine and make changes. I represent, as Dr. Ellsworth indicated, more than 1 million people. I know that the amount of time that I spend absolutely prohibits me from practicing my own profession. I spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 5 and 6 days a week, at the job of being a state senator. There's one state senator who's got 6 million people, not just 1 million, so we've got to look at that. He can't possibly adequately represent all of those people, no matter how hard he tries. So we must look at a problem of helping the big districts get their problem before the state legislature. But I have very seldom seen any measure of any import decided on a sectional basis in my 2 years in the legislature. If Los Angeles or San Diego or San Francisco or Oakland or Sacramento or Fresno had a problem, all the rest of us looked at the problems of that individual district. That's what we're there for. And there are very few senators, if any, who turn their backs upon the problems of another district simply because he doesn't have those same problems within his own district. I might also say that as the population of this state develops, we're going to find more and more of those who considered themselves Cal County senators faced with the metropolitan problems within their own districts. The studies nationwide indicate that one of the 15 or 16 great super cities of America will be the Bay Area, stretching clear back to Sacramento and clear down to Fresno, all one super city. Well, you've got lots of senators in there who may consider themselves Cal County senators now, who must face these problems that we in the metropolitan areas have already had to face. But I have not found any senators in my 2 years who would turn their backs on the problems in my district, the furthest from the seat of government, simply because it was far away or because they didn't have the same problem in their own backyards.
Thank you, Senator Fisher, for a very good explanation. If you don't mind, Senator Fisher, though, you said something about demographic projection of tremendous growth. I want to point out to this audience that it was not democratic projection. The word demography has to do with the forecasting of births and not politics. Would you take this another step now? Because I've heard this question raised. Well, actually, except in degree, what is the difference between this apportionment issue and the changing boundaries of districts every 10 years, sometimes rudely referred to as gerrymandering?
It's gerrymandering if the other ones do it, then it's redistricting if you do it. California's Constitution requires every 10 years that the assembly and congressional districts be redistricted so that they may be as nearly as possible of equal size. There are some other provisions in the Constitution that make this not ideally possible. As for instance, every assembly district must be, no assembly district may lap over a county line, so sometimes it's difficult to make them each identical. Then, too, you have an enormous growth in some and very little growth in others. For instance, the 55th Assembly District in and around Whittier was the smallest in 1951 when it was carved out. It now, the assemblyman there now represents about 500,000 people just because of the growth within that Assembly District. So it gets all out of kilter during this 10-year period. The apportionment of the Senate can occur, however, only between counties, as has been done a few times. For instance, when Charlie Brown's district, which is all Southern California, according to Minnelli, originally was, when the Alpine County was taken away from Senator Berry's district, if I remember correctly, and put into Charlie Brown's district. But the redistricting of the assembly must occur every 10 years. Now, there have been some states which have failed to do this, where it's been required by the Constitution, but the courts have held that this is a political question, and up until recently have shown no inclination to force state government to do the reapportionment that redistricting required by their own constitution. This is why in some states, Illinois and Texas, for instance, you've had congressmen at large, because there has been a failure to redistrict when they have picked up enough population for an extra congressman. The result has been that not just the Senate being in those states, not only the Senate being oriented more towards the rural parts of the state, but also the assembly itself, not being redistricted, has itself become very unrepresentative. And so this is where the big hoop-de-doo has occurred over the years. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that brought about the constitutional amendment of 1926, which finally went into effect in a roundabout way in 1930. The assembly failed to redistrict itself for several years running, up until 1925, as I recall, even though they were required to do it in 1921. The result was a lot of pressure building up to do something about the apportionment of the reapportionment of the legislature. So we then divided up into a district-oriented upper house and a population-oriented lower house. I might, if I had another minute on that, go on to say that that all government, it seems to me, must be judged upon its effectiveness, its ability to deal with current problems adequately and responsibly without getting clear off the track, without stopping dead in its tracks and without getting off the tracks. There are all kinds of checks and balances, and they work sometimes and they don't work sometimes. if you find that the present apportionment and the present redistricting of our state legislature makes it impossible for government to operate responsibly and effectively in the state, then it's time to make some changes. If you find that it doesn't operate effectively in some districts, it's time to make some changes as to those districts. But the important thing in government is always continuity and an understanding of how to use the mechanisms that are there for the people to use. I noted that Mr. Frank Doherty spoke on this subject before your club some time back, and he tried to bring the partisan issue into the question. Now, in 1948, he was against reapportionment. He's now for it. And one of his stated reasons is the fact that the Senate of California has shifted in its party orientation, and he made this point very plain. The reason some were in favor of reapportionment in 1948 was a feeling that a more liberal orientation of the state Senate was not possible when it was not elected in the big cities. The people of California have learned how to deal with this situation. The Senate has remained in the mainstream and on the tracks and not dead in its tracks in this last 10 or 15 years. And I think for that reason, we don't want to have a revolution in our method of representation in the state. We may make some adjustments, but we don't need revolution.
We have about half a minute now. Would you like to comment on the recent statements in the press that there's scandal in campaign contributions to Proposition 15?
I would. Senator Cannon has told me about people in his district who have been pressured into making contributions. I already indicated to you this invitation to the testimonial dinner, which was hiding from people the fact that they were contributing to Proposition 15 and not to Benelli. I think that some of the money raising in this campaign has been a little short of scandalous. Mind you that in Los Angeles, where you have a lot of cities who contract for their services to the county government, that there is enormous power in the Board of Supervisors, and particularly the chairman thereof, in matters of zoning and so forth. A lot of industrial concerns, a lot of landholders who need zoning changes, and this is a fruitful area for pressure. And my own personal suspicion is that this has been used directly or indirectly for the collection of campaign contributions. I suspect that the Attorney General is going to turn up some pretty startling things on this before it's over.
Thank you, Senator Fisher, for an interesting talk upon a vital issue. Meeting is adjourned. This is Stuart Richardson Ward, and across the microphone from me sits the Honorable Hugo Fisher, State Senator from San Diego, who spoke before the weekly general meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California here in the Sheraton Palace Hotel in San Francisco on the topic, reapportionment, the case against number 15. Senator Fisher, you have many accomplishments and fine record in the legislature. You were chairman of the Senate Committee on Legislative Representation and to the Education, Elections, Judiciary, and Water Resources Committees. You delved into this a very important proposal, number 15, from all angles. And I'm wondering if before we jump into the list of evils to solve that are either really inherent in it or alleged to be inherent in it, I wonder if we could define a couple of terms. For example, I think perhaps the average man in the street would be hard put to it if, not you lawyers, I mean the average man, to define the term possessory interest. What is a possessory interest, Senator Fisher?
Well, a possessory interest, and this refers to a tax measure that Mr. Benelli, the proponent of Proposition 15, has in mind. The possessory interest deals with the interest which a defense contractor has in materials, in work, or machine tools which are owned technically by the
federal government, but which in fact are under the control and in the possession of the defense contractor. Los Angeles County, San Diego County that I represent, and a good number of school districts sought in the late 50s to tax the defense contractor's possession of materials, the work in process, and tools owned by the federal government.
So that brought in the next question I was going to ask you, Senator Fisher, and that is, what is a possessory interest tax? Well, and how does that tie in with Mr. Bonelli?
Well, Mr. Bonelli wanted a possessory interest tax. In fact, Los Angeles County imposed such a tax in the middle 50s. Many people claim that it was not proper under the laws of California, so the matter went to court. The Supreme Court of California eventually said that the possessory interest tax was not legal under our taxing statutes and never had been. But in the meantime, Los Angeles County and other districts had in fact gone ahead and collected the tax, paid under protest, and they were ordered by the court, in effect, to give these taxes back. In 1959, at the general session of the legislature, Mr. Bonelli came to the legislature, asked us not only to legalize this type of taxation, but in addition to that, to permit the retention of the taxes which had been illegally collected, an ex post facto law. The Senate Revenue and Taxation Committee turned the matter down, turned it down not only because of the that the ex post facto thing is obviously unconscionable, but also for the more important reason, and that is that defense contractors in California would have been put at a very substantial disadvantage with relation to defense contractors in other parts of the country.
They had to charge more than those in other parts.
That's correct. For other places that were not charging such a possessory interest tax. This is a problem the federal government, I think, eventually should look into.
Well, now, Senator Fisher, in the work of the Founding Fathers, their deliberation that hot summer in 1787 in Philadelphia when they drafted our Constitution, curiously enough, as I recall it, there was almost an issue of this sort that you were discussing before the Commonwealth Club today that divided up that convention. The small states and the big states got worried about this matter of proportional representation. The big states wanted to be all straightly on how many people they had living in them, and the small states wanted it on a basis of each state, regardless of size, having representation, and we ended up with this wonderful compromise of two senators for each state, and then proportional representation for the lower house and the House of Representatives.
As a matter of fact, I think they were called the Virginia and the New Jersey plans, and we wound up with what was known as the Great Compromise.
Exactly, and the funny thing was they started to draw a constitution up with the idea of not providing for parties, and they ended up by having a party in their own convention before they'd met a week to discuss a constitution. That's human nature. Well, now, the first thing that you discussed before the Commonwealth Club today was the subject of the evils, or the alleged evils, which it is claimed that this Proposition 15 was designed originally to solve. What are those, and do you agree with them?
Well, Mr. Bonelli started to talk originally about the lack of adequate representation in such matters as water, the possessory interest tax, and some other things. I come from Southern California. My county, or most of it, lies within the Metropolitan Water District. I happen to be one of those who worked very hard for the water program, which is the bond issue, which will be before the people on November 8th. I found during the negotiations on that in the Senate that Mr. Bonelli was up trying to pressure the governor's office and the legislature into adopting his proposals, which would have made for a statewide water program for the benefit of Los Angeles County, as far as I could figure it out. I felt that we needed a statewide program that obviously is not ideal to any one region of the state, because it is a compromise. But Mr. Bonelli thinks that because most more people live in his county than live in any other county, that he's entitled to dictate to the state of California what our statewide development should be. this is the wrong way to approach it, because we have a vast number and a vast separation of interests within the state, all of which must be compromised out in the legislative process in a balanced legislature where regionalism is the touchstone of the Senate, and where strict population apportionment is the rule in the Assembly.
Well, now, the two main issues, perhaps, it could be said, could it not, are one, equalization of representation in relationship to the numbers of people living in any given political area, and secondly, the equalization or distribution of some fair amount of influence by people that live in the urban, in the cities, in the congested areas, as against those that live out in the country or the suburban areas. How does that tie back into that plan that the legislature initiated in 1930, Senator?
Well, in 1930, we finally put into effect an initiative which began in 1926, if my memory serves me correctly. Prior to 1930, the Assembly and the Senate were both apportioned strictly on a population basis, but the legislature had refused to reapportion after the 1920 census, and this eventually boiled up into an initiative which put the 80 assemblymen strictly on a proportional representation basis, and took the Senate and apportioned them on county or multi-county senatorial districts. There are 40 senators. Most of us represent one county. None of us can represent less than one full county under the present constitutional provision, and none of us can represent more than three full counties.
Well, your present plan is sort of a compromise, then.
That's correct.
Just like the Great Compromise of 1787,
That's
huh?
correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, say, I was thinking as you discussed this matter of setting and resetting boundaries. I haven't been brought up in New England within a block of a man named Elbridge Gerry, who was a lineal descendant of the Elbridge Gerry, whom I believe signed the Declaration of Independence and was in on the Constitutional Convention. And I think it's in that family the word gerrymandering came up, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
How would you define that, sir?
Well, this, as I recall the story, he was in charge of redistricting in his state, and he drew up for himself a district which looked like some sort of weird animal when you saw it on the map, and somebody accused him of having drawn a gerrymander.
They called him a gerrymander, and it was a weird-looking animal on the map of Massachusetts. And what was the objective of his drawing that up?
The objective of his drawing it up was to carve out a district where he himself would be safe.
Is that going on in this plan here in California, in your judgment, Senator?
It certainly is, as far as Los Angeles is concerned. They now dominate the Assembly. I might point out that no money measure may originate in either house of our state legislature, but none can pass unless it passes each house by a two-thirds vote. This means that in the Senate it needs a two-thirds vote, in the Assembly it needs a two-thirds vote. Los Angeles County alone has 31 assemblymen, by virtue of which it has an absolute veto power if they all agree with each other within Los Angeles, which doesn't always happen, of course. They've got an absolute veto power on the expenditure of any money for any sort of a program, any place in the state. They will, under this measure, now pick up six senators, so they will then have seven senators, and with a little horse trading, they can pick up enough to have a veto really in both houses. It's fairly easy for Los Angeles County to get an absolute majority in the Assembly, because, as you see, they only have to pick up ten assemblymen in order to have an absolute majority in the Assembly.
Well, now, how does this plan, as you see it, Proposition 15, affect the voting rights and the proper representation of, shall we say, first, the cow counties, the sparsely populated mountain counties, Senator?
Well, let me point out that a lot of people are misled by Benelli and those promoting his plan into thinking that this is an equalization of votes. In fact, it's not an equalization of votes. There will be some districts left after the reapportionment which have almost as few voters in it as in some of the districts at present. What it does is reshuffle the regions represented and put half of the senators below what's called the male breed line, which is an artificial line for the apportionment of highway taxes. It will put 20 above that line and 20 below that line, but in order to do that, it takes 8 senators out of the north and puts them in the south, with Los Angeles picking up 6 of those 8.
How does it affect the Northern California interests? This program's being heard all the way from the southern end of the northern part of the state. How would you summarize it, Senator Fisher?
Well, I would say that it made much more difficult the representation of interests in those sparsely populated parts of our state that have interests that are at variance with or need additional attention that the city legislator may not recognize. Mining and lumber and water interests that need attention. A lot of other interests that are not well understood by us in the more urbanized areas.
Well, you said, Senator, at the Commonwealth Club just now that if I'm quoting you correctly, that this was a plan that seemed to be aimed to divide the state and to achieve a sort of a discontinuity of government.
My view is that if this measure passes, and incidentally at the moment the polls show that it's going to pass, that this means really civil war in the state of California and will make impossible for either end of the state to promote any sort of a statewide program of any benefit to the state as a whole. I think the legislative process will grind to a very nearly a complete halt. Anything done in the future will be done on a most terrible log-rolling basis.
Who put up the money for this?
Well, Benelli pressured a lot of people in his own home district to put the money up originally. A list of them has now been filed with the Secretary of State, but mainly Los Angeles interests.
Thank you very much indeed, Senator Fisher, for this altogether too brief summation of the case against Proposition Number 15, the reapportionment measure. And may I announce that next week, on this same program, that I'll be interviewing for you, same station, same time, the Honorable Jacob K. Javits, the well-known United States Senator from the state of New York. And he will be talking on the subject, United States Peace Leadership.